last few weeks, we've been talking about how to put some muscle to our faith. And our guest speaker this morning did that in a big, big way 5 years ago. Steve resigned his position. That's a very stable position for one of the most influential churches in our nation. And he prepared for and then ran from Los Angeles to New York, coast to coast, all for the cause of clean water. I think it was something like a marathon a day for 150 days. Quite the feat. A few things to know about Steve. He is an honors graduate of Ozark Christian College. That's where Steve and I actually met. Along with a few others, we put together a skit group and wrote our own skits, and we traveled for the school performing these. And here's a picture of the group. This was when there was a lot less of me and a lot more of Steve's hair. And Steve went on to lead at senior levels at Willow Creek Community Church in South Barrington, Illinois, for over 15 years in a variety of different pioneering efforts. And Steve and his wife, Frances, have been married, will be married 32 years this year. And they have two grown children and a couple of dogs, and they live in Carroll Stream, Illinois. Will you please give a warm Ellisville welcome to Steve Spear?
So much. It's awesome being with you guys here at Ellettsville, and it's really cool hanging out with Byron. We don't hang out nearly as much as we should, and probably more on me than him, because he's always letting me know how he's doing, and I let him know how I'm doing. But it's so cool just to be here to hang out with Byron and to be with Angie, and to have it just doesn't, you know, like when you have a great friend, you don't see each other for a while, and then the moment you lock eyes, it just feels like it's been just like a few minutes. So other cool thing is that I think some of you know this. We didn't do this at the 9 o'clock service, and I'm kicking myself. Yesterday was Byron's birthday, if you didn't know that. So, like on the team that I lead, man, we make a big deal about birthdays. So I'm just going to pretend we're all part of the Team World Vision team right now, and we're going to sing happy birthday to Byron. Now, you got to pay attention at the end. I always throw a little bit of a thing on the end. And if you might do this at the end, just work with me, okay? And if you don't do this, you can do this at the next birthday celebration that you're at, and people will think you're a rock star, all right? So here we go. And we're going to sing. We're going to go after this. All right, ready?
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you.
That's awesome. What are you, 45?
Something like that.
Yeah. There definitely is a joke between Byron and I that actually is not really a joke. It's actually reality that I owe him my life. Okay, I really do owe him my life. So that skit group that we traveled with in 1984, which is like bizarre, where that's 34 years ago. We were like right around this area 34 years ago in Bedford, Indiana. So that same summer, though, so Byron invited me onto that team, and that summer is where I met my wife, you know? So he's like, you owe me, you know, like that part of your life, you know, which is like a big deal, obviously. And then when I was graduating from Ozark my senior year, I'd asked Francis to marry me in November of my senior year. In January, I wasn't even thinking about a job. Byron was always kind of looking out for me a little bit. And I didn't even have a job lined up, and I'd be graduating in a few months and like getting married. And so Byron, knowing this and knowing a little bit about me, he met a pastor in Iowa who needed a person on their team, and he made the connection between the two of us, and I ended up joining that team at this church in Iowa. So like I owe him my career. So when you owe somebody your wife and your career, like, you know, you sing happy birthday a lot to them. So anyways, it's really cool. I wanted to start out by showing you a couple of pictures and then making a confession to you. First of all, the first picture I want to show you, this is how the U.S. run began and ended. It was 5 years ago. This is the 5-year anniversary of the U.S. run. So it began on the left, April 8th, 2013. That's at the far west rail of the Santa Monica Pier. And when I got to that far west rail, I literally almost like collapsed on my knees. It was one of these moments where I'm going, oh my goodness, God. Not that I didn't know what might be in front of this. I mean, I became the 282nd person to do a successful U.S. crossing since records were kept in 1908. So I knew the odds were pretty stacked against me to actually complete the deal. But I just bowed and said, God, I need you. We need you. I'm dependent upon you. And then on the right side of this image is how the run ended on September 6th, 150 days later. This is the overlooking the Statue of Liberty in Battery Park. And that posture I thought about for a long time. When you spend 150 days largely by yourself, you get to have a lot of time to think. And I knew when I got to New York, if I were to get to New York, if God would grant the strength and the protection, I would fall to my knees instinctively, thanking him for his protection and his provisions over the U.S. run. The second image that I want to show you is of one of our World Vision sponsored children. This is Winnie. And you're going to meet Winnie a little bit more later in our time together. But this little girl has changed my life, changed my heart, changed my perspective on a lot of different things. And I just wanted you to kind of have an early introduction to who she is. Now I want to make a confession before you. So before you pull out your phone and say, you know, tweet visiting pastor to Ellettsville, you know, this is their, it's not that big of a confession, so don't, you know, don't get too crazy. So here's my confession. I don't have a tattoo. Now, many of you are kind of going, I really don't care. I really don't care, Steve, that you don't have a tattoo. And it's like, I have nothing against tattoos. My daughter has one. Some of my best friends in the world have a tattoo. But it's just like one of those things that just isn't like a thing for me. For I think in large part because I don't think that there's anything been big enough or major enough in life for me to warrant having it permanently inked or, you know, etched on my skin. Now, the first time I said that statement was a couple of years after the U.S. run, and Michael Chitwood, who's a young guy who started Team World Vision in 2006, he's become obviously a very good friend. The first time I said that out loud, Michael looked at me and said, are you nuts? Steve, you ran across the United States. You ran like 3,081 miles. You covered 14 states. You went through 10 pair of ASIC running shoes. You ate like 1,000 in peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. You ran at 7,500 feet above elevation in Arizona. You covered like 32,000 of aggregate elevation change in the Allegheny Mountains of a week of running. You got attacked by 6 wild dogs and raised over $500,000. Man, you should have like the United States perimeter etched on the back of your back. I'm going, no, I just don't know if that's big enough. And it's just a weird way that I think, okay? But recently, I have been thinking, if I were to get a tattoo, and my wife would really like me to get one, by the way. I don't know, she just would. But if, which I don't think I ever will. But if I were to get one, I know where I'd do it, and I know what it would say. I'd probably put it right here, like on my forearm. I think it would be somewhere right there. And I think it would be somewhere in and around my life verse, which is Philippians 1:6. And I don't know if what I would have, but it'd be something related to that. Philippians 1:6 is only 14 words long, and it reads this way. He who began a good work in you will carry it on to completion. He who began a good work in you will carry it on to completion. I love this passage. I love the letter of Philippians, but I love this passage. He, the very God of the universe, the one who created the heavens and the earth and all that we see around us, wildlife, human life, plant life, all of this, he began a good work in you. He began a good work in me. He began this chiefly through Jesus Christ and what Christ did on the cross for you and I to redeem us and then to restore our brokenness. He began this good work in you. He began this good work in me. And then he carries it on to completion. God completes his work in our lives. And I'm convinced of this, and you probably would be as well. He uses people and circumstances to complete his good work in our lives, doesn't he? He uses people, and then he uses circumstances. Circumstances that we sometimes welcome in life, and then sometimes those unwelcomed things, right, that come our way, and God uses those things to complete this good work that he's begun in us. Now, one of the ways that I believe that God completes his work in us is how we care for the needs of others. Let me say that again. I believe that God completes his work in us. One of those ways is how we care for the needs of others. So this week, as you know, Byron and many of you from the congregation took on this Matthew 25 challenge. You took on this daily challenge, this daily exercise of allowing your life to be altered in such a way so that you could be sensitized to the needs of others in our world. My hope and my prayer is that God completed something in you as a result of it. Of course, it's all based out of Matthew 25. And these words we know, they're very familiar to us. And I just want to remind us of these words from Matthew 25, where Jesus said, "For I was hungry and you gave me something to drink." Or rather, you gave me something to eat. "I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger and you invited me in. I needed clothes and you clothed me. I was sick and you looked after me. I was in prison and you came to visit me." The righteous will answer him, "Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? When did we see you a stranger and invite you in, or needing clothes and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and go and visit you?" Then the king will reply, "Truly I tell you, whatever you did for one of the least of these, my brothers and sisters of mine, you did it for me." You see, when we care for the needs of others, something gets completed in us. Even this week, you know, when you did these various challenges, whether going without lunch and then breaking that little fast with rice and beans, or not drinking, you know, only drinking water on Tuesday, or sleeping on the floor, or wearing the same clothes twice, or doing any of those daily, I would call them exercises or disciplines, usually what happens when you do something different, it opens up a space in your life for God to work, for a new thought to come into your mind, a new observation. And in this particular case, Jesus is simply reminding us out of the book of Matthew that when we meet the needs of others, not only are we meeting him, we're actually seeing him in the lives of others. You see, Jesus gets up close and personal to us when we get up close and personal to others. And that's what I think happens. That's the bottom line. You get up close and personal to the needs of others. And by getting up close and personal, something forms in our hearts. Something powerful happens when we get up close and personal. And maybe you didn't have the opportunity to do the Matthew 25 challenge this week, but you know this happens, right? I mean, it was so cool to see some of the pictures. Byron was telling me all about the back-to-school bash that happened here on campus. And to see the pictures of what happened out in your parking lot was just flooded with people. What is it, last weekend, right? That, you know what? God completed something in every single one of you by you being a part of that experience. And think of the people who are on the receiving end of that. God's completing something in them. God completes his work in us when we get up close and personal into the needs of others. Something happens in our lives, and something happens in their lives as well. You see, it was something in and around this thought that happened in me personally, where God wanted to get up close and personal in a few areas. When it comes to running, this is kind of a crazy thing. I'm like the most unlikely guy on planet Earth to have run across the United States. This was completely not in the cards. As a matter of fact, I didn't run my first marathon until 2007. It was the Chicago Marathon in 2007. Team World Vision began in 2006. World Vision, many of you are quite familiar with World Vision. We're the largest Christian humanitarian organization in the world. We serve in over 100 different countries, and it was founded in the mid-1950s. Team World Vision only began in 2006. It was the vision of God to a great friend of mine named Michael Chitwood. And in 2006, Team World Vision had its inception at the Chicago Marathon with 90 people wearing this orange jersey, 90 people. Fast forward for just a moment. This year, we'll have 2,000 people running the Chicago Marathon with Team World Vision, largest charity by a factor of three. We'll have 1,000 people running the Indy Monumental Half and Full Marathon in Indy in November. This year, we will have nearly 15,000 people running a half or full marathon with Team World Vision, raising $15 million for clean water nationwide, over 425 church partners. But it started in 2006 with 90 people wearing a jersey like this. And a buddy of mine was one of them. I wasn't there, but a buddy of mine was. He ran that year. The very next day, my buddy calls me and he said, "Hey, Steve, you need to run the Chicago Marathon with me next year in 2007 with Team World Vision." And I had a simple two-letter answer for him, which was N-O, followed by the phrase, "I hate running." And for 4 months, my buddy pestered me to say yes. And for 4 months, I told him no. I said, friends, we can sponsor another child. My wife and I have sponsored a child. 2 months after we got married in 1986, we sponsored our first child with World Vision. But I said, we can sponsor another child. I can write a check. I do not need to run. And for 4 months, he continued to kind of lay it into me, and I successfully stiff-armed him. And then one evening in April of 2007, I can literally remember this day like it was yesterday. My wife and kids were gone. I was home by myself, and I heard this little whisper. Nothing audible, but a little whisper that basically said, hey, Steve, as a pastor, all the time, you're always inviting people to take a step out of their comfort zones. You're always inviting them to take a step beyond their fears. Why is it you're so unwilling to train for and run the Chicago Marathon? And I didn't have a good answer. And in that moment, I felt like I was being called. So I called my buddy the next day, and I said, I'm in. And he said, what changed your mind? And I said, I think it was God. I quickly adopted 4 goals for my first marathon. Goal number 1 was to hate running less every time I ran. Goal number 2 was to train well enough to make it to the starting line. Third goal was to finish before they close the course. These were not high goals. And then the final goal was to raise $1,000 for clean water. And I completely thought it would be a one-and-out deal. But guess what happened? God completed something in me. Something formed in me. Something further completed his work that he'd begun to do. And I could put my finger. There are definitely some things physically. Relationally, I started coming into a deeper level of friendship than I'd ever come into. And I honestly feel like, you know, it's interesting just hanging out here this weekend. You know, God authored kind of a cool friendship between Byron and I and 2 guys on our team from the Parable Players called Damon and Dave. And it was kind of something very powerful to me. And while I'd had friendships in ministry, there was a thing that was lacking. And God brought friendships into my life through this thing that have just rocked my world. He completed something in me. So the next year, Michael Chitwood, the guy that launched Team World Vision, he said, hey, Steve, the vision of Team World Vision is to have it anchored in the local church. We want to invite people who are out of shape, all sizes, all ages, all shapes, to run a marathon, but we've never had a church say yes to launch it from their stage. Would you be the first pastor to launch Team World Vision from their stage? And because God had done something in me, I said, yes, I'd be happy to. What do I need to do? Now, Michael told me, like, he described what I needed to do like he'd done it 100 times. I found out later he'd never even done it once. He was a very persuasive guy. But he said, it's really easy to make a 3-minute announcement. I'll give you the script. Then we're then going to show a 2-minute inspirational video. Then you can invite people up to the front after the service for a 10-minute info session. And we're going to talk them through their fears of training and fundraising. Okay? I said, great, Michael. Sounds like a plan. It won't work. I said, who comes to church on a Sunday morning having no idea that an ass is going to come to run a marathon and they're going to say yes on the spot? I just said, it's not going to work. But because it had changed me, because God had completed something in me, I said yes. And so I did the 3-minute announcement. I told people, I said, hey, if 80% of those people that will run with us have never even run a 5K. We have a couch to finish line training plan. That's right. We'll take you from the couch to the finish line and then right back to the couch again. All these things, all shapes, all sizes. I said those things. Then we showed the video. We had about 800 adults in our service that morning. To my amazement, 75 people came up to the info session. And they were all shapes and they were all sizes. And my first thought was liability. I thought, this is a problem. Like you know, there's a lot of people here that shouldn't be running a marathon. And I asked Chitwood, I said, hey, so how good is this couch to finish line training plan anyway? And what was amazing to me, 50 of the 75 people trained for and completed the Chicago Marathon that year and raised $65,000 for clean water for kids in Africa. What took me back more than the money that was raised was the completing work of Christ that I saw happen in the lives of the people that year. We had one of the stories that happened that year is we had one particular marriage in our church that was on the rocks. It was definitely going south. And the husband and wife, we had 2 services like you guys have here. And they were so not on the same page, they were attending different services. So the husband attended the 9, the wife attended the 11:15. And we made the invite at the 9, and the husband came up, and he wasn't a runner, but yet he sensed God needed to do something in his life, and he signed up to run on the team that year. His wife, not knowing, she attended the 11:15. We gave the pitch at the 11:15, and she came up to the info session. And over the course of that training season, their marriage got back on track. Something completed in them. The next time we did a baptism service, we had like seven people show up in their Team World Vision jersey because their faith had become that much more real to them. And God completed something. And this was something that we just saw happen again and again and again and continue to see again and again. Why? Because something gets completed when we get up close and personal to reach and meet the needs of other people in our lives. And then God just continued to kind of call me into different things and to try different things. And a few years after that, in the fall of 2010, is when I was minding my own business. I was on an innocent 5 or 6 mile run in Ohio where my in-laws live. And at about mile 3 of that run on Old State Route 40 in St. Clairsville, Ohio, and I can take you to the patch of pavement today, I heard this little whisper that simply said, "Steve, you're to run across the United States for the good of others." I completely thought that was a bad taco from the night before. I thought, that is just funky and weird, and nobody does that. And I don't know if you've ever tried keeping a beach ball under the surface of the water before. You push it down, and it pops back up again. Push it down, and it pops back up again. That's what I did to this calling for 14 months. I just ran from it. I pushed it down. I squelched it. And then finally, in like August of 2012, after 14 months of this, you know, spiritual gymnastic routine, I just said, "God, I'm yours. I know that you're calling me to devote myself more to running and how running changes lives. And if the expression of that is a run from LA to New York, filled with more unknowns than I can count, I'm in. I don't get it, but I'm in." So my wife and I did what all sane people do. I resigned my position of 16 years. My wife sold her job, or sold her business that she'd been building, and we trained for her, and I trained for this crazy thing. What was interesting, though, is who God used to get up close and personal to me to make this a reality. Who got up close and personal to me? So I want to show you a little video clip right now, and I want you to look at this, and I want you to pick out the person who you think got up close and personal in my life.
In 2007, I got roped into running my first marathon. I hate running. I only had 4 goals: to hate running less each time I ran, to train well enough to make it to the starting line, wanted to finish before they closed the course, and I wanted to raise $1,000 for clean water in Africa. I completed the marathon, and that was 5 years ago. So when people ask me, "So why are you running a marathon this morning? Why are you running one tomorrow and one the day after that?" Well, I tell them that I still want to hate running less each time I run, but this time it's different. I want to raise $1.5 million for clean water in Africa. And to do that by running 120 marathons from LA to New York so that 30,000 people in Kenya can have clean drinking water for life. So how did I go from running one marathon to now running across the entire length of America? It's definitely been a process. I started running about 30 miles each week. Now, sometimes I'm running close to 130 miles per week, equal to that of elite runners. And there's definitely been some great training days in this, and there have been some ugly ones as well. The worst training day consisted of an 18-mile run in the morning, 8 miles in the evening, and on that evening, when I was running that 8-miler, I feel for the first time I was running for water. I feel like I got a glimpse of what it must feel like for 1 billion people who don't have access to clean water. Children like our World Vision sponsored child, Winnie. She, like millions of other women and girls, travels 6 miles for water every single day. And you can't tell me that that's okay. I felt that on top of the physical and the emotional value that training provides in a person's life, for me, it was a personal calling. So I started with one marathon, and that one soon turned into 3, 3 to 5, 5 into 30. Then there were some ultra marathons. I was gradually running more and more miles, and as the number of miles increased, so did the number of lives that were being affected. There are 1 billion people on the planet that don't have access to clean water. All they know is what it feels like to walk 1 mile after the next, 1 day after the next, every single day. So when people say, "Why are you running 120 marathons across America?" my hope is to take some of the miles from Winnie and 30,000 people just like her and to bring them clean water instead.
So who do you think got up close and personal in my life? Winnie. Yeah. I mean, she was the one. I mean, it was in God's great plan that this little girl would come across the path of my life, and she would get up close and personal to me, and then I would get up close and personal, and God would complete something. And I even like the phrase Brian was telling me, putting muscle to your faith, that you guys are talking about here at Ellettsville. You know, some, our faith gets strengthened, you know, when we start, again, getting up close and personal to the needs of others. But Winnie changed everything for me. Here's the deal. You know, there's right around 800 million. The numbers have gone down since that video was shot. About 800 million people on the planet don't have access to clean water. The lack of clean water contributes to more deaths than AIDS and malaria combined in all of acts of war and violence. It's a number one cause of death on the planet is lack of access to clean water. And the trouble is most of us just don't know anybody personally that has to walk for water. We just don't have a face to put with a name or a name with a face. We just don't have it. I didn't have that. Meeting Winnie not only changed that for me about the provision of clean water, but it also just allowed my family and I to intersect with hers. And if you would have told me, you know, what's the cost of completion? I don't know, you can put a price tag on that. You know, when we began sponsoring Winnie, $39 a month, I'm kind of going, oh man, I would do that, you know, fivefold and would continue to just to say, God, I need that in my life and it's been really good for our family. And I just wanted to, you know, invite you as we kind of wrap up this Matthew 25 weekend, whether you did the challenges or not, that you would consider, God, how do you want to get me up close and personal to the needs of others locally here through like what you did last week with you as a church and individuals with the, you know, the back to school bash, but maybe globally as well. And maybe it is that God might be tapping you on the shoulder and whispering to you this morning that maybe your life is to intersect with a child like Winnie's and to consider sponsoring a child as well through World Vision. And when you came in, there's, and if you look in the seat back in front of you, if you want to just grab one of these cards out, this little girl's name is Cheru. She just happens to be a little girl that we've met through World Vision, who now has access to clean water, which is pretty cool. But this is Cheru. And, you know, you get this little language on here from Matthew 25. If over the course of the next few moments, you're kind of sensing that God might be leading you to sponsor a child with World Vision, here's what you do. You just kind of fill this out on the back. You can fill it out and choose how you might want to do this. And then in the lobby, I'll be out there with a few of our friends. And we've got about 40 of these picture folders. And you can just find a child. This happens to be Jose. His birthday is January 25th, 2013. He lives in the DR. He's 5 years old. And you can just look through these picture folders and you can just, you know, fill this out and then just trade it. Just find one and then we'll have your information. And then this becomes your sponsored child. This now becomes a member of your family. And my wife and I have made this decision several times, and we're just so grateful for the kids that God has brought into our lives, and this could be something that he might be inviting you to do as well. If some of you, I know, sponsor a child already, my simple, you know, invitation, is there room in your family for one more, perhaps, that God might be reshaping you? My wife thought about this a couple of weeks ago. She, maybe like some of you, there's an iced coffee drink that she likes from a place called Starbucks, and she gets one fairly regularly, and she thought to herself, she went, as she was at the grocery store, and she saw the bottled stuff of Starbucks, like in a bottle, and she did the math, and she said, wait a second, if I buy this bottle, it'll cover me for like almost a week, because she puts a lot of ice in her cup, way more information you need to know about my wife's coffee drinking stuff, but she said, this will last me for like a week. If I do this, and I don't do the thing by stopping by the store, that's it. She did the math, it's like a kid sponsored. So we're like, done. So we made that decision this week. We kind of just rearranged how we think about our money. It was just kind of interesting. So wherever you might be thinking, this is how we'd love to invite you to consider, you know, stepping into this. And again, come out and see us out in the lobby afterwards and allow maybe a Winnie or a Jose or maybe somebody to intersect with your life and allow God to complete something in you as a result of it. I will tell you one quick story about the U.S. run before I close. And I could literally keep you here like all afternoon telling you stories from the U.S. run. I could keep you here till like 5 o'clock this afternoon. I won't, but I will tell you one. And this story happened just about a week before the run ended. I had just crossed into New Jersey, and something supernatural, almost unexplainable, occurred this day. First of all, I got a late start on my run that day. I did 35 miles on this day, and I didn't get started running until about 1 o'clock in the afternoon, which is a little ominous to start that much running at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. By 6 p.m., a gray sky had settled, and I was at mile 25, and I started up a fairly sharp incline. The week before was a brutal week of running through the Allegheny Mountains in Pennsylvania. I did 175 miles, and there was 32,000 feet of aggregate elevation change. So the last thing that I wanted was another incline. And my first thought was, why is there a mountain here? Like, I'm in New Jersey. Like, isn't New Jersey supposed to be flat? I didn't know Western New Jersey topography that well. But with each uphill step, I just found myself getting more and more irritated as I went up this thing. The irritation soon turned to anger. Anger at this stupid incline, anger at this ridiculous run, anger for how crappy I felt, and anger at God. And while I'm not proud of that, that quiet road heard some choice words and letters from my very fatigued soul. And directly after my fit of anger, a sense of aloneness, like a severe sense of aloneness, swept over me. And while I knew dozens, if not hundreds of people were praying for me, I felt alone and isolated like never before. And I just spent that time in aloneness, I just put one uphill step in front of the other. A moment later, I lifted my head and I noticed that there was a cyclist coming down on my side of the road. Now, as the cyclist grew closer to me, he was about like 50 yards away, as he grew closer to me, he failed to come off the shoulder to give me room to run. This added to my growing irritation. I thought, buddy, if you do not come off the shoulder, I will drop you in the ditch. And do not play chicken with this pastor. I'm in a bad state, and I will drop you. And when he got about 20 yards from me, he stopped. And he said, you're Steve Spear, right? And I was like, a little bit in disbelief. And I said, yes. And then he said, you're the guy running across the United States for kids in Africa, right? And continued disbelief, I said, yes. And then the next line out of his mouth floored me, as if what he already said hadn't. He said, I just wanted to let you know, there's a group of about 10 people a mile up the road, and we're ready to cheer you on. We heard what you were doing, and we wanted to remind you, and he said these words, you are not alone. We believe in you. And with those words, I was in complete spiritual shock. I was stunned, I was overwhelmed, I was blown away. And then this angel of hope rode alongside me. I mean, previously I wanted to deck him, but now he's an angel. Just shows you how fickle I can be. And sure enough, about a mile up the road, here is a group of about 10 people. And they were ready to rock my world. And this picture will mean nothing to you, but this group of individuals are who I call my New Jersey angels. They saved something in me that day. They totally got up close and personal in a way that I wasn't expecting, and God completed something in me that was literally unexplainable, that I needed at that moment in time. And they were followers of Christ, and we spent the next 10 or 15 minutes greeting one another. We hugged, we laughed, we shared about our mutual faith in God. I had like 10 more miles to run, so I didn't stay around like a super long time. And as I ran into the next mile, I marveled at the divine orchestration in the previous 45 minutes. Our faithful God had met me in the midst of my broken spirit and my sense of aloneness. He knew this son of his was in trouble, and he miraculously tapped a group of unknown strangers to surround him with presence and hope and to remind him that he is not alone. So I have a short reminder for you and just a closing little invite. The short reminder is this: you are not alone. Whatever you walk into this space with that has you in knots, maybe home, relational, something at work, whatever it might be, you are not alone. Psalm 125 says, as the mountains surround Jerusalem, so the Lord surrounds his people, that you would know in the depth of your spirit that you are not alone. And the invitation is this as well. How might God want to continue to use you to get up close and personal to the lives of others? Would he miraculously tap you on the shoulder so that you might maybe, come in contact with an unknown stranger or even somebody that you know that you can, like, meet their needs? It could be a child in another part of the world by sponsoring a child. It could be somebody locally here. But that God might use you in a way. And I'm going to be out in we got two tables out there with a lot of the picture folders on. So I'd love to meet you and chat with you as you might consider this and meet you and, catch your name. God, thank you so much for the church family here at Ellisville. Thank you for what it is that you've started and what you're completing. God, I thank you for Byron and Angie. God, I thank you for him in my life, and I'm grateful for how you've used him. God, I thank you for how you're using him in Ellisville. God, I pray that you would energize his gifts and his passions. I pray for the church here. God, I pray for a level of boldness, creativity, and vision, the likes of which Ellisville has never seen. God, might you continue to allow this church, even as it sits geographically or almost topography, to be this city on a hill, to be this beacon of hope, oh Lord. And we'll trust you. And thank you for being a God who has begun and completes something in us. And we'll give you the thanks. And we offer this prayer by faith in Christ's name. Amen.
Amen. Let's tell Steve thank you again for... You know, our series has been practically perfect, and if you remember when we first started off, we talked about the word perfect has the idea of completion, being perfected, being completed. One of the things that went through my mind and my heart this week was, why haven't I? Why haven't we sponsored a child? Why does it take an event like this to nudge me? I don't know, but I know it did, and we've signed up. And I invite you, put a little muscle on your faith and move in a direction, whether it's this or something else, but do something. But perhaps the why haven't I is about something else. Maybe it's about why haven't you chosen to follow Jesus Christ? Why haven't you chosen to be a part of a fellowship yet? And maybe this is that fellowship. Why haven't you? And I just ask you to answer that question as best you can. Why haven't I taken the next step that I need to take? Ask yourself that while we sing this song.